Grab your phone, tablet, or whatever you listen on and get comfy, because here's another great episode of the Pop Zara Podcast. Enjoy it.
There'll be Spectre Call, there'll be Fantasy, there'll be Daring Do and stuff like you would never see.
Hey, a movie! Yeah, we're gonna be a movie!
Starring everybody and me.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Pop Zara Podcast. We're talking about movies, we're talking about Hollywood glitz and glitter, silver screens and all that stuff. No scandals, because we're gonna have some fun. 2019 is over. 2020 has begun, but that means we can look back and talk about the movies that we loved, that we hated, that we were disappointed, that enchanted us, that became fans, the ones we did see in theaters, the ones we did not see in theaters, the ones we streamed, the ones we dreamed, all that stuff. Movies, movies, movies. That means the best, the worst, and everything else of 2019 in 2020. It's very apropos. And for that, we have Popzara's own movie critics, editors-at-large, movie fans, Ethan Brem and Christian Sterling. Welcome back, guys.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, man. Fighting colds, fighting laryngitis, fighting all that stuff. So we do this.
Me too.
It sucks, doesn't it? it really sucks. So there's not enough medicine in the world, and there's not enough of the good stuff. So, real quick, we do this every year. We do a wrap-up, and that is because we are leeching off the upcoming event. Coming out on February 19th, it's the 92nd Academy Awards. Golden Globes are done. Everyone said, you ever notice that? Everyone says they don't care about the Golden Globes, but they still watch. And they still totally care, and they dress up. I think the only watch for Ricky Gervais, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
that's the reason why. That's the only reason why I watch it.
Yeah, if we're all being honest, he's the only good thing about that show. But everyone says, oh, we don't care, we don't care. The Hollywood Foreign Press, they're all, but they still want the trophy. It's a game. They must have them all. It's like Pokemon for adults with narcissistic personality disorders. So, but the Academy Awards, I mean, they've come under some scrutiny. You know, if you've been following the news about the Grammys, there's a lot of controversy. But the Academy Awards are still pretty much the most prestigious of all these things, and that includes the Tonys, because they still have a little bit of magic, and, you know, they still hold a little bit of sway. We still kind of care who wins a little bit. And so, real quick, 2019 was a big, big year for movies, both on the screen and off, and we'll talk about that in a minute. A lot of stuff came out this year, a lot of stuff is this, and to give you perspective, the top 10 grossing movies of 2019, courtesy of the-numbers.com. Number 10, Jumanji, The Next Level. Number 9, Joker. Number 8, Aladdin. Number 7, Spider-Man, Far From Home. Number 6, Captain Marvel. Number 5, Toy Story 4. Number 4, Frozen 2. Number 3, Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. Number 2, The Lion King. And number 1, no surprise, Avengers Endgame. Boy, Disney must be pissed. They got shorted. They only have like 6 of them.
Yeah. Jeez Louise, they have so many.
And that's not even counting the top 20. And Spider-Man is sort of half. That counts as half. So
yes, sure.
But anyway, this is the third year that a Star Wars movie has not been the top grossing movie of the year, following Attack of the Clones and, of course, Solo. But Solo doesn't really count.
Mm-hmm. No.
So I think, whereas Avengers became the biggest thing of all time, everywhere except the United States, by the way. Did you know that? Avengers Endgame became the highest grossing thing everywhere except the United States. That distinction is still held by Star Wars, The Force Awakens.
Yes.
So take that, JJ. So, anyway, those are the movies. Not a lot of variety in the top 10, but I know on your personal favorites and disfavorites, there's going to be tons of variety and diversity. So, because I've talked to you both behind the scenes, so I kind of have an inside look. So, what we're going to do, guys, we're going to talk about our favorite movies, our least favorite movies, anything else that we like, and we're going to wrap this up in a nice little bow so people can listen and like and hate us. But please like us. Please. We need it. So here we go. So we're going to start with Christian. So Christian, because you have a much cooler accent than I do, let's just talk about the top. How many you got on your list, by the way? How many movies made your top list?
13.
13? Yeah. That's a lucky number. That's so lucky.
I wanted to get to 20, but to be honest, not too many movies really impressed me that year, to be honest.
Okay. Now, you're more of a cynic than a lot of us here, so this is going to be fun. So you and I agree. Okay. You and I agree on a lot of stuff, but when it comes to like our personal favorite movies this year, you and I are personally going to clash, which makes it fun.
Yeah.
So you'll probably side a lot more with Ethan. So let's start from the bottom all the way up, what was your 13th favorite movie of 2019, if you have an order?
Yeah, I don't really have an order. I pretty much have like a top three, but the rest are kind of there, but no real particular order. So the bottom one I had was Dark Waters. That's that one where they investigated, you know, the company basically putting poisonous chemicals into the water. And, you know, it's like one of those legal court cases where, you know, there's a Mark Ruffalo, the lawyer, trying to take on, you know, the big corporate giant to, you know, do good by the people. Yeah. So that's my number 13.
You know, these movies about the poison water come out like every 10 or so years. Have you noticed that? There's always a poison water legal movie about every 10 or years. There's Aaron Brockovich. Yeah. There's a civil action. Like, they always come around and they never stop. We should do something about the poison water. Really, otherwise, you know, all these movies keep coming. So it stars the Hulk, and you liked it?
Yeah, I liked it. You know, it was, you know, obviously didn't have a very big budget. It was just, I don't know, it was just good to sit down and watch, you know, just a nice drama, you know, looking at serious events, something that doesn't have superheroes. It was, I don't know, I enjoyed it for some reason, yeah.
Some would say he's the biggest superhero of them all. He fights for justice. He fights for justice. Okay, so what's number 12?
The Eddie Murphy movie, Dolomite Is My Name. It was on Netflix.
Yes.
Yeah, that I don't know. I just haven't seen Eddie Murphy in anything for a while. And, I mean, it's still, you know, Eddie Murphy isn't a great actor. He still comes across as Eddie Murphy. But, no, I just enjoyed it. It was just an interesting story about a guy, you know, who couldn't get a break. And he just, you know, carved out his own destiny. It was, I found it inspirational. I just really liked it.
That's actually on my list, too. And, by the way, who's am I talking about? Wesley Snipes is amazing in that movie.
He's awesome. Yeah.
He's awesome.
He's hilarious.
He doesn't get any word for that, but he's amazing. This is the movie that, what was that movie we talked about with James Franco, the one based on The Room?
Disaster.
Disaster, yeah.
Yeah, Dolomite is the movie that movie should have been. It's a much better movie. So,
yeah.
Dolomite. I like you. I like that choice. Okay, what we got? Going on next.
Next one is Ready or Not. It's that really weird premise of, this orphan poor girl marries into a very rich family, and they play a game of hide and seek, and she's just basically got to survive the night. It's a silly premise until it gets to the end. And yeah, I don't know, I just thought she was just a really, I forget the actress's name, she's Hugo Weaving's niece, but anyway, it was just a good funny, violent I just dug it. It was just a great, strong lead female character. I loved it.
All right, what's up next? What are we on, 11 already?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Next one is Pet Sematary. I really enjoyed the remake. It's one of my favorite Stephen King movies, and I enjoyed the that they changed it enough for it to be different to the, you know, the previous film version, but you know, not too much of a different that it, you know, it changes the story so much that it's, you know, unrecognizable. I just enjoyed it. I like that story. I've seen it before, and I enjoyed the remake. Yeah.
One of the better of the 5,000 Stephen King things that came out this year, by the way. There really were 5,000, by the way. I think if somebody counted, it's like 4,900. No, I'm just kidding. But it felt like it. There's like shows on right now as we're talking. It's crazy. Yeah. All right, let's keep this momentum going. What's next?
I've got Alita: Battle Angel. You know me, mate. I love my special effects, my action movies, this type of thing I grew up with. And yeah, I know. I enjoyed it for the visual spectacle. I mean, it was just impressive to sit back, watch, check my brain at the door, and just enjoy the special effects. So, yeah, what can I say? I enjoyed it purely for the special effects and the action in it.
You know, it actually made a little bit of money, and it didn't have any controversy, and people seemed to like it. But do you think we're going to get a sequel?
Probably not. I mean, I'd like to see a sequel. And obviously, that ending obviously lends to the fact there's more story there. But whether or not they do anything more, I don't think they're going to. But I hope so.
You know what? Tron got a sequel.
Yeah,
30 years later or something.
Tron got a sequel. And then a show. Both bombed.
Yeah.
All right, no more of this live-action anime stuff. What's going on next?
Next one is, I don't know how well this one did, but it's called Fighting With My Family. It's about that pro wrestler. She started out, you know, from a poor family in the UK, comes to America, has a level of success. Once I looked into it, I was a little bit disappointed after watching it, finding out that it was, you know, historically, it's inaccurate in regard to the real life events of the characters, but I still really enjoyed it. You know, it was just a good, you know, underdog movie. This person, you know, outside their comfort zone, going to another country, finding a level of success, dealing with success, meeting their heroes. I don't know. It was just another one of those really great inspirational movies that I really enjoyed.
Had The Rock in it too, didn't it?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he had a part.
But what a year for Florence. How do you pronounce her last name? Pugh? Pugh? God, please be Pugh.
Pugh, maybe.
Pugh. I mean, she's nominated for an Oscar for Little Women.
Yeah, she was good in that movie too.
And she was really good in Midsommar. This is her breakout year. But I did not see Fighting With My Family, and I know you said it's they kind of fudge reality. But if you follow the lead character's story, if they actually made it real, 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 it would not be a family movie.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I won't say what happened, but she stars in very different movies after this.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, she does.
Yeah, very, very different movies. All right, let's keep the fun going. What's next?
All right, I got Avengers Endgame. What can I say? I love my comic book movies, and Avengers Endgame was, let's face it, was the biggest movie of 2019. Yeah, everyone was waiting for it. It's been how many years in the make? Like, you know, everyone's been waiting for everything to end for Marvel, and you know, it had fantastic, epic fight sequences, emotional endings. I know, I really enjoyed it. You know, what can I say?
Yeah, I made all the money. Made all the money.
Yeah.
Yeah, Avengers was good. I liked Avengers. It didn't make my top 10 list, but definitely liked it. I think I liked Infinity War slightly more, maybe, but.
They don't really work separate, though. I mean, they really are a set, right?
You do, yeah. You do have their companion pieces for sure.
Yeah.
I like the Avengers Endgame just fine. It didn't make my top 10 or bottom or top worst. But what I'm a little worried about, though, is that we're going to get to the point where these movies don't work independently, and I'm afraid of when that's going to happen. At some point, it's really going. Like, we'll forgive Avengers. It's been 10 years in the making, but. You know what I mean? At some point, you just want an independent thing by itself. But this movie made all the money, so good for it. You finally beat that bastard James Cameron. So, okay, let's keep going. Keep going. Sorry, James Cameron. Right. I love you, James Cameron, but please don't kill me.
Yeah, and so obviously, once again, we know how much I love my action my action movies. John Wick 3, what can I say? I loved it. It was a bit long, and it did, if you read my review, it gets a little bit numb towards the end because there's so much action that there's too much action. But you know what? It's I love the way that they shoot it. You know, it's a movie that relies on, like, you know, proper choreographed action sequences as opposed to, you know, just, you know, fast editing like the Jason Bourne movies. You know what I mean? Like, you know, Keanu Reeves has to actually do that stuff. So it's, it's great. I loved it.
Can we just say, I was going to save this to the end, but can we just say right now, we can revisit this. This was Keanu Reeves' year. Well, 2019 was the best year he's ever had, in Hollywood. And I think he's
going to got the hype for Bill and Ted 3, too, coming out.
Bill and Ted 3, plus he's going to be in that new game, Cyberpunk 2077. Plus he's got all that stuff. And you know what's funny? John Wick 3, have you ever noticed that movie looks just as good in still frames as it does in motion?
It's a cool looking movie.
It's very pretty to look at. It's very, very pretty, and you just don't see that anymore with action films.
Yeah.
So, all right, no more Keanu Reeves love fest. Let's keep moving on.
All right. So these ones are now my top. What do we got? 1, 2, 3. These are my top five for the year, and they might be surprising. So number five, I've got Brightburn. I really enjoyed that. Like the dark. You know, the dark take on essentially what if Superman was evil, you know what I mean? And, you know, you've got this alien kid from outer space, you know, the farm family, you know, they take him in and try and raise him, and he's just got an evil streak in him. And I love it because it doesn't have a happy ending. It's, you know, it's got this tension. Everyone gives a great performance. It's just a really great take, you know, on the superhero genre, but not done like the way Marvel or DC have done. I really liked it. It really surprised me. I walked out and I was just like, wow, that movie was fantastic.
You know, I got to give that movie made one of my lists. I won't tell you which one right now. You won't like it. But it did help introduce Billie Eilish to the world, you know, with her song Bad Guy. And now she's she's going to be doing the James Bond song for what's the next James Bond coming? No Time to Die, is that it?
Yeah,
she and her slurry vocals are going to slur all over James Bond. So thank you, Brightburn. Thank you.
Yeah, like the female John Mayer.
You know what? It could have been Ed Sheeran. We've dodged a bullet.
Oh, yeah. is a bullet.
I think they should have got Adele back, by the way. I would love to see her back. You know, not
she should do just all of the James Bond themes.
Yeah, she could be like,
what's give them all to Adele.
What's her name? Who did all the James Bond songs in the 60s? What's her name? I'm gonna kill myself for not knowing this. You know what I'm talking about? Shirley Bassey. Yeah. Shirley Bassey. Yeah. Yeah. She did like two or three.
Yeah. You know, she did a couple.
Adele could do two. No more Alicia Keys though. No more Alicia Keys and Jack White.
No. And no more Madonna.
No more. You know what though? We differ on that. I like Madonna's. So, not too many James Bond songs you could dance to. Although
that's true.
But if we are talking about the most danceable James Bond song, it's gotta be Duran Duran's "Hungry Like the Wolf." I know that wasn't a James Bond song. I know it wasn't a James Bond song, but I count it because I forgot the name of the other song. What is it? What James Bond song did they do?
I can't remember which one they did, but that's a good one actually.
The one we can't remember, everybody loves. Yeah.
So, Paul McCartney was the best one in my opinion.
Yeah, Paul McCartney was good. There's a lot of good James Bond songs. There's a lot of crappy ones too, though. So, okay, speaking of movies that are not crappy, Christian, what is number four? Are we on four or three?
Yeah, we're on number four. So number four for me is Rocket Man, the biographical musical on Elton John. That movie is fantastic. Even if you're not an Elton John fan, it's just it's well made. Like I said, I'm not really into musicals, but you know all the musical numbers, are edited nicely with the story. It's a fantastic performance by what's his name?
Taron Egerton. Oh my God.
Yeah, Taron Egerton. Yeah, I just had a brain moment.
Edgerton.
Yeah, and it's I enjoy biographical movies, and it's just a fantastically made film. I really loved it. And I'm not even really into Elton John, but I just it's solid.
You don't like Elton John?
No. He's got good songs, but I'm never going to put on an Elton John CD or he's not in any of my playlists. But I appreciate him for what he's contributed to music.
Well, you know what's funny? The production of Rocket Man was outstanding, by the way. And Taron did a very good job. I hate to say this, he's a little too muscular to be Elton John, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Idris Elba playing Nelson Mandela. It's like, you really don't look like a starving, like a starving social activist. But I got to give the movie credit because I love musicals that interpret. Like even the movies I don't like Moulin Rouge, anything that takes its time and just doesn't show people dancing. And by the way, did you know the guy who directed this movie, Dexter Fletcher, which is an awesome name? He's going to be doing the new Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, okay.
Sherlock Holmes 3. Cool. Yeah, go figure. There should be dancing in it.
Yeah, and by the way, shame on you for not enjoying Moulin Rouge. I'm just going to throw that out there.
I appreciated Moulin Rouge, but it's just, I'm a big David Bowie U2 and fan and everything, and I appreciated the mashups. Who's the actor? I love this actor's name. Who's the one? He sang Like a Virgin.
Like a Virgin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's his name? He's such a great actor too. It kills me. I can't remember any of their names today. He's older. He was in James Bond. He was in one of the Indiana Jones movies. He's in everything. Shame
Sean
on me.
Connery.
God, I wish. Sean Connery in a musical. Has Sean Connery ever been in a musical, by the way?
Oh, man, that would be amazing.
He was in
I just want someone to throw him in there. He probably can't even sing, but that would make it 10 times better.
His voice singing those songs would be outstanding. I would buy the original cast soundtrack.
Oh, man.
I will get you the guy's name later because I'm going to slap myself silly for not knowing this guy's name. But like I said, it's... I'm a big fan of musicals, Christian. I'm a huge fan of musicals, but I'm a huge fan of musicals with good music.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of these Hollywood movies today, they come out and they have this Broadway-style crap. And I'm sorry, I'm not a big fan of Sondheim. I'm more of a fan of, dare I say it, Andrew Lloyd Webber, which I'm sure his name's going to come up on this list for a very different reason later.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Jim Broadbent sang Like a Virgin. Madonna's Like a Virgin. So
okay.
Which is a weird juxtaposition. So, all right, moving on. Let's finish your list.
Okay, so these are the top three. So number three is Jojo Rabbit.
Yes.
Good one.
Yeah, that movie, what can I say? It's. I know they did a very great job of balancing comedy around basically awful topics. Mm-hmm. Fantastic performances. It starts, like, the first half is really funny, but then it starts to shift into, you know, into the more serious drama while still having that flavor of comedy. It's just a, it's a weird, enjoyable movie. And Nate, you and I, you know, we saw that together.
I
and
I
rate it. It's Jojo Rabbit was, yeah, that's in my top three. I love that.
That's a good one.
I love the fact this movie is being celebrated. And I got to tell you something. I read the book that it's based off of before I saw the movie. The book has nothing to do with the movie. The book is awful. The book is
terrible. Really?
Yeah. There's no imaginary Hitler. There's nothing. It's a drama. The movie is fun. It's alive. It has life. It has David Bowie and Beatles songs in German.
Yeah. I love that, like, anachronistic just they put 60s music with World War II. It was amazing.
By the way, Taika Waititi, I can't pronounce, I never get his name, Taika Waititi. He is probably my favorite emerging director in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's fun.
He's great.
Yeah. And if he does take over Star Wars, like the rumor is, then get ready. Because he did, I think he directed the last episode of The Mandalorian.
Okay.
So, but he's great, isn't he? He's awesome. So,
yeah,
Jojo Rabbit, thumbs up. It's on, my list, too.
Yeah. It's like Drop Dead Fred, but with Hitler.
The imaginary friend.
Yeah.
we got a Drop Dead Fred reference in the podcast. That's amazing.
By the way, I love Drop Dead Fred.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Drop Dead Fred. And what's his face died a few years ago too, the guy who played Fred. He was part of that that second wave British comedians that came after Monty Python, the one with Hugh Laurie and Stephen Fry and Emma Thompson. What's his name? You know what? I don't know anybody's name today.
Rick Mayall or something?
Is that his name? Yeah, he's so funny. And Katie, is it Phoebe Cates?
She's in it. She's a good.
I'm sorry, but Drop Dead Fred is a great movie. It needs.
Yep.
It's also disgusting, but it's a great movie.
Yeah, so, I love that we're talking about Drop Dead Fred right now.
Oh man, bring it back. So, yep. All right, so what do we got? Finish it up.
Okay, so my top two, although having said that, I acknowledge there's a few big titles I haven't seen yet, so I might change. But given what I've seen, my top two, my number two is Ford versus Ferrari.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's weird. I'm not a car person, and the thing is that you don't need to be a car person to enjoy this film. It's just about two friends, overcoming obstacles. They're basically, you know, mechanical car geniuses overcoming the corporate marketing giant of Ford, you know, and change the course of history for America. It's just a great movie of friendship and determination with outstanding performances and some cool car bits in there as well. You know, if you're into car racing, it's a really well made film. I love it. I'm a big Christian Bale fan. Yeah, it's up there. I was really surprised. I just thought I was going in to see a car movie, but it's more than that.
You know what's funny? It's one of these movies that made a lot of money, and it was really well critically acclaimed. And it's every time people talk, there's nothing original in Hollywood. You have a movie like Ford versus Ferrari come out, and people forget about it. And it's actually, I think it's one of the – I think it's a top contender for Best Picture at the Oscars, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, wow. I do.
That's
yeah,
the one that, that's the only one I haven't seen from the Best Pictures nominees, but –
yeah, it's got a lot.
I do want to see it.
It's got a lot of goodwill going into it. So
that's cool.
Okay, so we got one more on your list.
One more. And like I said, and Ford vs Ferrari and this film kind of tied. I like them both for different reason. And it's 1917.
Mm-hmm. So, oh yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, 1917. This, like I say, in my review, there's not really much to it. It's more the way that it's shot. It appears as one single shot. I mean, obviously it isn't, but you go along with two soldiers just have to get from point A to point B to deliver a message, you know, and it's like you're the third invisible member of their mission, you know, and it's just and it's really simple. It's not over the top, so that when the moments of violence or the moment of loss and pain happen, they really stand out, because a lot of it's just them traveling, and it's hard to explain until you see it. It's just a visual and auditory spectacle. It's just really well made. It's hard to explain. Like I said, the story isn't even that great, really. But it's just, I loved it. I was so shocked.
It gets the job done.
Yeah, it's one of the most immersive movies I think I've ever seen. And I like that the two lead actors, I've never seen them before. And I like that because it makes you feel like this. You could be watching maybe a like a like old footage, you know what I mean? Mm. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because if it was played by like, you know, like Christian Bale and Matt Damon, like you'd be like, okay, this is Christian Bale and Matt Damon. Like it takes you, it distances you from the story. But exactly. Because it was two guys you've never heard of or seen before, you're like, okay, these are actually two World War One soldiers, you know? I love that.
Yeah. And they could be anybody. It's not even like they're you know, they're not like a hotshot pilot or anything. They're just two guys, you know, ordinary dudes that have to, you know, survive getting from point A to point B. That's it.
Yeah.
And by the way, one of the actors in there, I know you see you haven't seen him before, but you have. He's just unrecognizable. He's Tommen from Game of Thrones.
Okay, I don't watch Game of Thrones.
Shame on you.
those Game of Thrones people, man, they're littering in every movie they can find. Wow. Have you noticed that? They keep trying to make them stars. But the guy's name is George MacKay. Yeah. That sounds like a classic Hollywood.
Yeah.
Actors.
They were great, too. I mean, they're not getting really any love, I don't think, but especially the main guy. He was really good, I thought.
Yeah.
You know, this movie also does something fun. Did you guys ever see is it The Thin Red Line with Terrence Malick's World War II movie back in the 90s?
Yeah.
I did try to watch it once. But
I'm not a Malick fan. I think the whole world has finally caught up to that. The guy only makes like two movies in 20 years, and he makes like 10 in two. But you remember with that movie, what it was interesting? It took its big stars, but only make them do cameos. And that's what this movie does. Like the big stars, like Colin Firth and Cumberbatch, and who else is in this movie?
Something strong.
Mark Strong.
Yes, Mark Strong. Yeah.
Does he play a villain? No, he doesn't play a villain. He always plays a villain. You ever notice that? They only show up for a minute or two, and that's different. And, you know, it's – yeah, and one thing, as a managing editor, I have to talk to people who do reviews a lot like you do. One thing that it just infuriates me is that when people write reviews and all they do is talk about the script, you're not watching a script. You're watching a movie. The script is a part of it, but a good director can make something happen. Yes. I imagine the script for this movie is probably 2 pages. It doesn't need to be bigger than that.
And I love that the story wasn't so, you know, wrapped up in war jargon. You know, you just went on this I love that the story was basic and it was just easy to follow. You didn't have to worry about the details behind it. It was just they got to get to this point and by dawn or whatever it was. And, you know, they have to tell them to stop because it's a trap. That's it. You know,
I will say this. The combination of Sam Mendes as the director and composer Thomas Newman is one of my favorite pairings. These guys have done a bunch of movies together, and to me, it's almost like Spielberg and John Williams. Like they suit each other.
Did Newman do American Beauty?
I think he did. Let me double check. I will double check on my magic checking box. But I remember they did one of my favorite movies of the 2000s. They did what was it called? Road to Perdition.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that movie. To answer your question, yes.
They did
do that. And to answer your question, yes, they also did Road to Perdition. And yes, they also did Jarhead.
Oh, okay.
And yes, they also did Revolutionary Road.
Wow.
And yes, they also did Skyfall. So there you go.
Wow, yes. Oh, and Skyfall's so good.
But they also did Spectre. So, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, but that's it. Christian, that's a pretty impressive list.
It's a good one.
There's a few there that, like I said, I haven't seen. There's a bunch that I think would make it to that list if I'd gotten around to seeing it. But yeah, that's what I've seen so far.
We will get to the leftovers here in a second. So Ethan, let's turn our scope to you. So Ethan Brehm, what were your favorite movies? And how many you got, by the way? 10?
I'm a crazy person. I actually rank everything I see. So I have I have every movie I watched last year in order.
You're on Letterboxd. You're obsessed with Letterboxd.
So yeah, I am obsessed. So I have like a top 50 technically, but we're not going to do that. But
Are you 500 pounds?
Not yet. No, I'll cut it off at 11 because there's the 11th one I kind of want to talk about.
And we can, and like I said, we can wing it at the end. We can toss in movies over the scene because you can't see everything.
No, it's impossible. I wish.
So let's start with 11. So let's go. Let's turn it up to 11 because 11 is awesome. We'll call that the Spinal Tap.
Style.
Yep, yeah. Spinal Tap. All right. So 11.
So my number 11 was Unicorn Store. is Brie Larson. It was actually made back in 2017, I think, and I don't know if it did some festival stuff back then, but it got a release this year on, was it Netflix, I think? Unicorn Store, I just connected with it really personally. It's about an only child who gets this mysterious letter that she could own a unicorn if she shows up to this store. And Samuel L. Jackson's the store owner, and nobody's in the store. It's like an imaginary store almost. And you kind of wonder the whole time if it's real or fake, and her friends and family don't believe her. But then she meets this guy, and he's like, I don't believe you. But then over the course of the movie, he starts to, you know, he's like, okay, I love this girl. So I, you know, the more he starts loving her, then the more he starts kind of believing her. And then it just takes you on this journey and this ride, and it's about creativity and what it means to be creative. And I just really connected to this movie. It's about your childhood and how your creativity kind of formulates from a young age. And man, it was good. It wasn't perfect, but I had to include it on this list because I just really liked it.
Somebody's going to say, I want to see that movie with Brie Larson and Samuel Jackson. And they get a totally different movie than they were expecting.
Yeah, and this one's better in my opinion.
That's not a controversial opinion.
Yeah.
So. All right, Unicorn Store, what's next on number 10?
So my number 10 is Jumanji, The Next Level. I really loved the last Jumanji. Well, I love all of three of them, really. But Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle kind of caught me off guard. I went into it because I loved the 90s one. And I was like, okay, I'll see this just because, you know, I thought it was just a cash grab, but I went in and I loved it. And this one I thought was going to be just another cash grab. And then I was like, holy cow, it's really, really good. It was hysterical. I liked it probably as much as Welcome to the Jungle. They kind of, you know, they copy the formula a little bit, but it was it works. And they put some new spins on it, too, which makes it work. Danny DeVito and Danny Glover, and they kind of – Danny DeVito gets sucked into The Rock's avatar, and then Danny Glover gets sucked into Kevin Hart's avatar, and it's just – those two guys are really good. I'm not a huge Kevin Hart fan in as far as his acting. I love his stand-up, but his acting's, you know, he hasn't been in a ton of stuff that I love, but these Jumanji movies, I think, are his best cinematic work.
He's so frustrating. You know, he's so funny, and he's just in crappy movies most of the time, and it's a problem. Yeah. It's a problem. Because you know he's better than that. You know it. You can tell.
Yeah, no, I love Kevin Hart. He's funny.
So, okay, Jumanji, Next Level. Let's bring this to the next level. What's next?
All right, yeah, Christian, me and your list are, like, completely different.
as I'm looking That's at this. Good, right?
That's good.
Yeah, no, it's really good. None of them are the same. So number 9, I have Zombieland Double Tap, another sequel. Zombieland, the first one back in 2009, is one of my favorite movies of all time. And so I've been waiting for this sequel for 10 years. I went in, I saw it with, you know, pretty high expectations, and it met those expectations. It's not as good as the first one, but it's pretty good, and it has some really good moments. And if anything else, you love the first movie because of the world that it's in, and the characters and the dynamics, and this one just brings all of that back. And so, I mean, you can't fault it for that at all. And there's not a ton you can fault it for, I don't think, if you love the universe.
Well,
so
I got a fault.
Yeah, I enjoyed that one.
I got a fault with that movie, by the way. But don't worry, I'm going to back it up with a brag. It rips off a gag from Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, Shaun of the Dead, yeah.
Yeah, it rips it off. But
they do, it does so well. It does it so well, though.
I know, it's still fun. But real quick, though, none of them look older, except Abigail Breslin.
I know, insane.
But they look exactly the same.
Yeah, it's weird.
And, you know, but I will say this about Zombieland Double Tap. It has the single funniest thing I've seen in a movie last year. And that, of course, is the post-credits with Bill Murray.
Yeah,
I laughed harder at that scene than I have at any other movie this year. It is.
Oh, it was great.
It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Did you see the ending, Christian?
Yeah, I did. I stuck around. It was hilarious. I love the Bill Murray reference.
I love the Bill Murray thing. And by the way, you're like, and I'm not going to spoil it, but you're like, but didn't they kill Bill Murray in the first one? Yeah, they did. So
made it work, though. They made it work.
Yeah, they made it work. It was a lot of fun. And bad CG aside, it was a fun movie. So, okay, what's next after Zombieland?
So my number 8 is I have quite a few streaming movies on here, maybe like 4. But this one is another one. I think it was Netflix too. It was I Am Mother. About this girl who's raised by – it's like post-apocalyptic, and she's raised by a robot essentially, and like a really, really smart AI robot. And she's raising her to become, you know, how to be the first person in, you know, and the Eve, basically, you know, of the world. and the mother of the world, and and there's like a lot of surprises and twists, and it has a really solid message, I think, in it, and it just really catches you off guard a lot, and I thought it was really tight and really, really well paced, and it builds up in a great way. I don't know if you guys have seen that one, but
it's awesome. Actually, I forgot that I saw that one. I can't believe it. Yeah, it's got this really cool, futuristic, minimalistic feel, like but it doesn't feel like, you know, like some of these movies, they're minimalistic because they got no budget. Whereas this one, I mean, you know, you're watching it and it works because of the premise. It's really good. Yep. Yeah.
Wikipedia considers I Am Mother an Australian movie, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that funny?
Really?
Yeah, I know. And maybe because Rose Byrne's in it. But I'll say this. Good to see Hilary Swank again, by the way. I haven't seen her in a while.
Yeah, I think it's her best performance in a while, like a long time, in my opinion.
I will say this about, you kind of hit something I want to talk about before we close up about streaming movies. One cool thing about Netflix is populating the service, and they're producing a lot of mid-tier sci-fi movies that would have never been made. They probably would have gone to Sci-Fi Channel. They would have probably had sharks in them for no reason.
Yeah.
But there's been a lot of interesting movies on Netflix that would have never, ever come out. And I got to tell you, that's a big thing for me. I'm a big fan of concept sci-fi. You just don't see it.
Yeah. Anymore. And I love the minimalistic thing. I mean, I just love movies like that, like Castaway type of stuff. And this one just did it in such a beautiful way, I think.
I didn't see this, but it looked a lot like Moon a little bit. Like
the okay, I didn't see Moon.
It's very much like Moon. Yeah, that's what when my wife and I watched it, we're going, man, this very much.
I am okay. What's that Tom Cruise movie, Oblivion, where he's by himself? So
that's a good one. Did
Rose Byrne also in that one? I don't know. By the way, I will say this: a lot of editors on Pop Zara actually saw this movie and wouldn't shut up about it. So you're in good company, Ethan.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So I Am Mother. Yeah. So what's next after Mother?
So number seven, I got Joker. This one was so good. Todd Phillips, I mean, he did, you know, The Hangover. And, you're expecting something kind of along those lines. And then he does this, and it's just every scene is so – I don't know what you guys thought about Joker, but I loved it. I know it's kind of divisive, but
– It only made $1 billion. Very divisive movie. So.
Well, it didn't make my worst or my best list. I thought Joker just had an Oscar-winning performance by Joaquin Phoenix. Mm-hmm. But to be honest, I just thought it was overhyped. I watched it, and I'm like, it's a movie. Yeah. I wasn't impressed, but I can see why other people would be.
I just loved how poetic it was. It kind of had it touched upon some cool themes about, you know, media and kind of like – how things aren't black and white as everyone wants them to be, as in regards to, you know, like whether it's comedy or what you can say, what you can't say. It's kind of interesting stuff.
I like Joker too. And I'm fully aware that it's an homage to Scorsese films. I know this. Mm-hmm. I will say this though about Joker. We don't have to talk about it now, but one of the biggest companion pieces to Joker was the Martin Scorsese commentary that movies like Avengers and Captain Marvel are not real movies, but they're not cinema, but they're sort of roller coaster rides. And we both mentioned that Avengers Endgame was the biggest movie of the year. And I mean, financially, yes, but it wasn't the most talked about. Not even close.
No,
it was Joker, and Joker also made $1 billion, and it was talked about in terms of story and camera work and this. And you kind of see it from Scorsese's viewpoint a little bit. A movie with story first, with characters. That's what really gets people interested in talking about, whereas something like Avengers Endgame was really a carnival ride, a really fun, entertaining one. But no one's talking about the story. No one's talking about the characters and that. They're talking about who lived and who died. But in Joker, people are talking about it positively and negatively. And that's a big deal.
And it's funny because like these Avengers Marvel movies kind of started with a character movie with Iron Man. You know, that's a movie about a person, about a character. Mm-hmm. And you get into it, and I think that's what makes Iron Man so good, is because it is about his journey and how he grows and becomes a better person. Yes. In that one movie, you don't need 10 movies to show somebody becoming a better person. Like, he does it in that movie, and the journey is beautiful. And I mean, Joker kind of taps into that in a different way, obviously.
Are we all agreed that Joaquin is the favorite to win the best Oscar?
Think so.
You think so?
Yeah, he's got – like, if he doesn't get it, I'd be very surprised.
Me too.
I think – like I said, I think he deserves it. I've seen a lot of films. Although I had another guy who I liked too, who didn't make the cut. But I'll say this.
Oh yeah, I know who it is.
If it's not Joaquin, I think it's going to be Antonio Banderas. But we'll.
Really? Okay. Yeah, I think Adam Driver could give him a run for his money. I really liked his performance.
Yeah, he was in like 50 movies last year, though. He was like,
I know,
so
he's
many,
so much stuff.
And so diverse, too, to be honest. And yeah. A lot of them are streaming. He was like on 2 streaming movies. So, mm-hmm. Okay, Joker. What's next after Joker?
Number 6, I got Pokemon Detective Pikachu, which is kind of a weird movie for my list, I guess. But
you're a dad, right? You're a dad now. So
yeah, I know. I gotta watch for these things. I the whole time I was watching this movie, I was like, I would have loved this as a kid. My son, I can't wait to show this to my son when he's older. He's gonna be in love with this movie. It's just really cool. I'm a big Pokemon fan. I grew up a Pokemon fan, and I still play Pokemon Go obsessively. And this just like brought a whole new light to this world that I've been following since I was a kid, and it was just so funny, so entertaining. And I actually liked it better than Deadpool, actually, as far as, like, the Ryan Reynolds comedy stuff. It was a great movie, in my opinion.
Have you noticed every time they put, like, a live action and cartoon world together or a Muppet world together, it's always a detective noir?
Yeah, like Roger Rabbit.
Like Roger Rabbit. And there's more – or Cool World or the Happy Timers. It's always a murder mystery. Yeah. In noir. I don't understand. Why do that? But anyway.
Everyone loves neo-noirs.
They say they do, but we'll see. I will say this about this, though. I was one of the guys that actually wanted Danny DeVito to be Pikachu. So,
ooh, that would have been cool.
That would have been great, but it didn't happen because Ryan Reynolds is all sexy and everything. So there you go.
Yeah, yeah.
But sexy abs. So, all right. After Pikachu, what say you?
And then my number 5, I got Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I just love – it's kind of like a Shaggy Dog story where, you know, Tarantino takes these two guys – and, you know, they're you know, just going around town. It's kind of a love letter to Hollywood. And obviously we all know Tarantino loves his old school Hollywood stuff. It's in, like, everything he makes. But this was a movie that I just – it's a movie – the more I thought about it afterwards, I just really, really liked it. And, man, I just – I mean, what can you say? I mean, I think most people have seen it by now. So
I know Christian didn't care for it very much.
Yeah, I know, man, Christian, you didn't like it, huh?
It's on my worst movie. It's on my worst movie list.
it's
different taste.
Yeah. It's I'll say this. It's on my top 10 as well, Ethan. I think it's the best movie Brad Pitt has ever been in.
I think it's
his best performance. I thought he was great. I thought he was a real star.
He was.
I thought he was the best thing in the movie, by the way.
Me too. I just love. I mean, I love. If you are familiar with, you know, the Sharon Tate stuff, then it makes this movie even more meaningful. But on a different level, it just you just get immersed into this world where everything is old school Hollywood. You know, right when new Hollywood is kind of taking over and kind of the golden age is fading out, and it's just kind of like this gray, blurry area where things are changing. And you know, the 1969, tons of stuff was changing, obviously, especially in California, especially in Hollywood. And you have some events that really rattled the entire town. And it was just the way it's made here. I mean, obviously, a lot of people are talking about, you know, the characters weren't really developed a lot. But I just liked how it was kind of like the Shaggy Dog thing where, you know, there's just a bunch of different events and scenarios. And then they all kind of tie in at the end. And I just really liked how Tarantino did that.
The end is so strange, but it's a Tarantino ending. I'm not going to spoil it. Yeah. But he can't help himself. Have you noticed that? He always does the same ending.
Yeah,
it always devolves into this fantasy bloodshed. Like, he just can't help himself. But,
was a little bit restrained this time, actually, a little bit.
Well, yeah.
Oddly.
Well, he only destroyed Hitler's face. In this one, there's only a flamethrower.
It falls. True.
But we can't go that far without talking about the ending. So, yeah, sorry, Christian, you've been outvoted.
That's all right. Like I said, you know, the acting, it's one of those movies where I walked down, like, you know, the acting was great. It looked great. I say it recreated, you know, that era, that time, you know, of Hollywood. But what can I say, man? I was bored. I was so bored, and I was grateful for that ending to wake me up a bit, you know. So, you know.
Yeah, they had a scene. The first scene was like Musso and Frank, and I mean, my wife and I love that place. And they go in. And I'm like, oh snap, it's Musso and Frank, and like immediately I was hooked. It was just I'm a sucker for that stuff.
I'll say this: I actually think the most interesting competitive field at the Oscars are the best supporting actor, and that's a mm-hmm. list full of Brad Pitt, Joe Pesci, Al Pacino, Anthony Hopkins, and Tom Hanks.
Yeah, it's a good list.
That's the fascinating one, and I like all their performances. But if Brad Pitt got it, I wouldn't cry. I think he was excellent in there. So, mm-hmm. all right, Once Upon a Time. What's next?
All right, number four on my list is Jordan Peele's Us. I liked it. I thought it was an improvement over Get Out, which was a good movie, but it's a little less preachy and just, I thought, more fun, and you can just enjoy it and watch it for what it is. I love conspiracy theories, and I love the hook of this film, but the reason behind the hook, I think, is even better. And I'm becoming a horror movie fan as I get older. I didn't like them when I was younger, and I'm discovering horror movies now as an adult.
We've had many good
talks. This was a really good one. We have.
You've been filling up your knowledge gap.
Definitely. So so I don't know if you guys liked it or saw it or.
Cool. I hated it, but that's cool. I won't. It's fighting for the number one spot on my worst movie.
No way! Oh my gosh!
I hated it so much. I didn't hate it, but I got to tell you something. I wasn't the biggest fan of Get Out either. I think people who just discover Jordan Peele thinks he does this, and I think he's a great director of ideas. But if you've ever watched Key and Peele, his entire shtick is mimicry. Mm-hmm. And if you watched it, did any of you see the Twilight Zone reboot he did this year?
No, I didn't see it.
It is disgustingly awful. It is terrible. It is the worst version of Twilight Zone I've ever seen, to the point where the last – I'll spoil this for you so you don't have to see it. The last episode is Jordan Peele playing himself, mm-hmm. admitting that the season was terrible, and they had to do a CG recreation of what's his face?
Rod Serling?
Yeah, Rod Serling. They did this horrible CG recreation of him. Mm-hmm. And it's just it doesn't work. But I don't know, I think Us was a better movie than Get Out, by the way. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. I just wish he would play with themes more and he would just stick with story, and I don't know if he has that in him. He's very sporadic.
The one thing I will say about Us, I admit the first 10 minutes when I was watching it, I'm like, man, this is really awesome so far. It was just a great setup. And then when the so called horror bit kicks in, it just nosedives to like the worst thing I've seen in a long time. It's just my personal preference, man. You know,
I just like the tunnel concept. I've always kind of had an obsession with like underground passageways and hidden tunnels. I just always kind of been into that kind of stuff. And this was like a movie about it. So
I'll tell you what I like about the movie. Lupita Nyong'o is a great actress, and she's very good at this. And the actor who played her husband, what's his name? He was from Black Panther.
He was great in this movie, actually.
Yeah, like, where's this guy been? Like, and I'll give Peele credit. He's really good at bringing them out, and I think he's fantastic. Winston Duke, by the way, is his name.
Yeah, Winston Duke.
He's fantastic in this movie. So, no Academy Awards. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Okay, what's after Us?
Okay, and then number three I got. Not a lot of people watch this movie, but I just thought it was great. It's called Under the Silver Lake. It was, I think it was an Amazon Prime release this year.
Okay. No one saw it because Amazon screwed it up.
Yeah.
It was released in theaters for like a week. And then because for those who don't know, Amazon and Netflix have been sort of fighting for theater space because in order for a movie to be not eligible for Academy Awards, it has to play in theaters in New York or Los Angeles. And so Netflix has basically thumbed their nose and said, we don't really have to do that. But Amazon plays their movies in theaters, and they really have botched this whole thing up. So this movie played in theaters, and then it went to Prime, and then it went to Blu-ray, then it went to DVD, and it went all over the place. And it was really hard for people to find.
Yeah, it's by it's the follow-up for It Follows, the same director from a couple years ago. And it's just about this guy who's obsessed with conspiracy theories, and there also happens to be, I think, like a dog killer going around L.A. It takes place in L.A., Silver Lake. And it's kind of a companion piece in my mind to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. They're both Shaggy Dog stories. They're both kind of about murder and mystery. I guess Hollywood's not really about mystery, but it was about murder and these guys just wandering around town and kind of meeting different people and doing different things. But this one, so he's a conspiracy theory buff, and he's trying to cry. He believes that there's this hidden meaning in this song, and then it kind of takes him down this humongous rabbit hole of just discovery around town, and This was a movie, like, the more days I watched it after, it was just climbing my list, and I just thought about it more and more and more, and it gives you lots to chew on afterwards.
You know, people who saw this movie liked it. The problem is nobody saw it, and that's a problem. And that's a problem when we do these lists. So you're right, though. It is available on Amazon Prime, and I recommend going to check it out.
Yeah, it's really good.
All right, so Under the Silver Lake, what's next?
Number two is another streaming movie called Little Monsters.
Yeah, finally.
It's kind of a horror comedy about this teacher, Lupita Nyong'o, who takes her preschoolers or kindergartners to this, you know, this petting zoo for a field trip. But meanwhile, there's like this a U.S. testing facility next door, and like zombies break out, and they start infecting everyone at the petting zoo. And she has to protect her kindergartners from these zombies. And it's just so enjoyable. And I love the juxtaposition of, you know, the innocence of children versus the darkness of these zombies. But it also tackles some really good themes about, you know, self-improvement. And it has kind of a cool love story throughout the whole mix.
And
I thought it was a cool movie.
Yeah, it starts off as a sex comedy.
Yeah, it really does, actually.
And then it turns into a heartwarming love story.
Yeah. Did you like it? You saw it?
Me? Oh, I love. I'm the one who recommended it to you.
Oh, I didn't know if you saw it first. Okay, gotcha.
Did you see it, Christian?
No, I haven't, but it sounds like I should.
I'll say this. It is the most funny Australian movie I've seen in a long time. And
yeah, it really was.
Because I remember I was asking you about this. Do you remember that movie that came out in Australia, Christian, called Fortress?
Yes.
Have you seen Fortress, Ethan?
No, I have not seen Fortress.
Fortress was on HBO like every day because there was an Australian craze back in America in the 80s after Crocodile Dundee and
Mad Max and
stuff. Mad Max. And so everything got thrown in theaters. And Fortress was on every day. And it was about the female school teacher, their school bus or whatever gets attacked, and she's got to help the kids survive in the cave, right? And that's what Little Monsters was, basically. It's about this awesome school teacher who has to help the kids survive from these zombies. But you know who was really awesome in this movie? Josh Gad was great.
Yeah, he was so good. He was, like, creepy and weird. Oh, my gosh.
Children's host.
Oh, he's so good in this movie.
You have to see it, Christian, because for two reasons. The guy who plays the man, he's like the fat Thor that was in Avengers. What's his name? Okay. Alexander Englund?
Yeah. Yeah, he has the same kind of personality, right, as Thor. Yeah.
He was a lot of fun. And what was I going to say here? And you should know this because the guy who did this movie, Abe Forsyth, whatever, he is going to be taking over the RoboCop franchise. He is going to be making a
sequel
to RoboCop 2 called RoboCop Returns.
They're making another RoboCop, huh? Okay.
It's going to be canon, R-rated and canon to the original two RoboCops.
Nice. Oh, okay.
So we'll see. They skipped the third one, thank goodness. So, okay, good choice. Good choice. You should definitely see it. It's on Hulu. So let's finish
Hulu,
your list.
Yeah, that's right. It was Hulu, yeah. All right, and then number one on my list from the year was Peanut Butter Falcon, starring Shia LaBeouf, who's my favorite actor. But I don't like Nathan, you always tease me. You say, oh, of course you like it because it's Shia
LaBeouf. You want to marry him. You really would, too.
I love Shia LaBeouf.
You have a podcast dedicated to him.
I named my son after one of his characters. I there's movies he's been in that I didn't like a lot. But this was maybe my favorite Shia LaBeouf movie ever. It's about this guy with Down syndrome.
I'm surprised you didn't say Honey Boy, to be honest with you.
No, that's number 15 on my list.
So you had me at Down syndrome. So what's going
on? Yeah, so it's about this Down syndrome guy, and he has Down syndrome, and he has Down syndrome in real life, actually, and he plays this character who breaks free from, you know, his caretakers, and he just wants to become a professional wrestler. And along his journey, he meets Shia LaBeouf's character, who's kind of like this troubled guy, and he has like he's wanted for a bunch of stuff from these kind of bad guys. And you know, they teach each other lessons along the way, and it's to me, it was like the literal perfect balance of comedy and emotion, and it made me cry, but it equally made me laugh, and I thought it did a really good job of just building this dynamic between the two leads. And in real life, they actually had a really great friendship too, and it really comes off on screen. It's the only movie from last year that made my top 10 of the decade list too. So
you know, it's Shia LaBeouf has done a lot of work to try to get back into Hollywood's good graces.
Mm-hmm.
He did the only thing worse than Mel Gibson did when Mel Gibson blamed the you-know-whats for owning Hollywood.
He
besmirched Steven Spielberg, and you can't do, you can't do that. You can't do that.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see if Martin if Robert Downey Jr. and Mel Gibson can make comebacks, surely Shia LaBeouf can make a comeback.
Oh yeah, I hope so. And I mean, this was a this year was a great year for him. I thought Honey Boy kind of got. I thought Honey Boy was really well done. I thought it should have gotten nominated for at least some award shows for something. But it didn't really get any love. But this one, to me, was a better was a more enjoyable movie, at least. And I just really loved. I don't know if you guys saw this one. Did you see Peanut Butter Falcon, Christian?
No, I haven't. It's on my list. No, I haven't.
Really, it's good. You should see it. It kind of has like this bluegrassy roots feel to it because they're kind of going through North Carolina and Florida swamps and it's kind of got a cool vibe to it too.
That's weird. I mean, I'm not a real Shia LaBeouf fan, so even though it's on my list, it's low on my list, but I do plan on watching it.
Yeah, you gotta see it. It's good.
I did see Honey Boy though, and I gotta tell you, I thought he did a great job as him as his own father. And and the makeup was pretty good, making him have the balding spot and everything. So So okay, that's your top 11, Christian, your top 13. So let me get mine out of the way, then we can go to the ones we didn't like and we can wrap this up. Okay, no particular order, although my number one probably won't surprise you. I'll just start at the bottom. A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Huge Mr. Rogers fan, huge Tom Hanks fan, despite the fact that Tom Hanks does not look or sound anything like Mr. Rogers. The movie was special, and it made good points. It's a flawed movie, by the way. Have you guys seen it?
Yeah, I just watched it the other night.
Yeah, there's an attempt in the middle to make it some sort of artsy fartsy thing. It does not work, but the metaphor is good. It is solid. Like I said, it's the world's most beloved actor playing the world's most beloved TV presenter of all time. It's a good match.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Okay, now for something completely different. Next on my list is One Cut of the Dead. So,
I love that movie.
This barely counts as a 2019 movie, but I'm going to count it anyway.
Yeah.
So, it's a zombie meta movie that's not really a zombie movie, but it is a zombie movie, or it's a zombie movie about making a zombie movie about a zombie movie. Do you remember Robert Downey Jr. playing the black actor in Tropic Thunder?
Yes.
Yep. He says, "I'm a dude, pretend to be another dude, play another dude." That's what this movie is for zombie movies.
It's so good. It's one of the coolest meta premises I've seen in a long
time. It's not three different movies. It's one movie, and it's the saga of the Japanese Nick Frost character. By the way, he looks exactly like Nick Frost.
Mm-hmm.
If Nick Frost was born in Japan, he would look like this guy. I have nothing but good things to say about it. Zombies have been overdone. They've been exhausted. They managed to find something entertaining about them, thank God. So One Cut of the Dead. Next on my list, we've already talked about Joker. For all the reasons I said and more, I actually like this movie quite a bit. I don't think I'm ever going to watch it again, though, because
it was a hard watch.
I think I like the movies that inspired it better, but as a comic book movie, or it could not be a comic book movie. It could not be. Maybe this movie is not about Joker. Maybe it's just a joke on us that this guy is not really the Joker.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
You know, but the fact that this is from the same director as Road Trip is astonishing to me.
Yeah.
Because that movie sucked. Okay. And here's a surprise. It might surprise you guys. The Two Popes.
Mm.
One of the most beautiful movies I have seen all year, with two exquisitely good acting performances. Anthony Hopkins and Jonathan Pryce, both nominated for Oscars, by the way. Pryce for Best Actor, and Anthony Hopkins for Best Supporting Actor. The whole movie is based on a fraud. It's not a true story at all. It's cobbled together from speeches they've given, but when a movie looks this good and it's this entertaining, I recommend it. It's a streaming movie. It's on Netflix, and it is well watchable. It's just beautiful. Next on my list is The Farewell. Have you guys seen this yet?
Yeah, I saw that one.
No.
I think this – I wish this movie had been more successful than it had. Awkwafina is wonderful as the main character, but I thought the supporting cast was even better. As I've said to you guys both, this is the most accurate portrayal of Chinese culture I have ever seen in an American movie. Mm-hmm. It is completely sacrosanct. There are no stereotypes in this movie. It is wonderful. And for anybody who's ever questioned, like, Chinese sincerity, watch this movie. Read it with the subtitles. I think you'll enjoy it. Great performances. Okay, next on my list, we've already talked about Jojo Rabbit, a movie I saw with Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Hitler is the new hotness. So I don't know what else to say without spoiling it. Just very well crafted. Like I said, Taiki is one of the best directors in Hollywood. Watch this movie, make it up for yourself. It got screwed over by Disney because it was a Fox movie that Disney did not want to promote. They did not want to promote a movie with Hitler as an imaginary best friend from a child in Hitler Youth. But it's one of the most innocent movies of the year.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, we compared it to Drop Dead Fred. It's basically Drop Dead Fred meets what's the word I'm looking for? What's the girl? What's the book? No, I don't think I should go there. I think that'd be very controversial. So, yeah.
Tell us off air. I'm curious.
Yeah. I got to be careful here. We're not on a political website. So, but basically, yeah. Watch Jojo Rabbit. Okay. Next is the most beautiful movie of the year to me. The Last Black Man in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. I have not met a single soul who's seen this movie besides me. And that is sad. As I was talking to you, Christian, about this last week.
Yeah.
This is the movie that Spike Lee used to make. This type of movie where it is the neighborhood, it is vibrant. First time director, by the way. I think he's under 30 years old. Gorgeous. There is not a more beautiful movie that came out in 2019. I have no idea why this movie was not nominated for Best Cinematography. It is a scam. It is a sacrilege. Gorgeous. Won't be everyone's cup of tea. It's a little arty-farty. But it's vibrant and it's exciting. I felt about The Last Black Man in San Francisco the way people said I should feel about Moonlight. I thought Moonlight was a fine movie. But Moonlight felt contrived. It felt agenda-driven. This did not feel this way. This felt like an honest expression, and it's basically poetry. And I can't say that a lot about movies. I can't say that enough about movies that it made me feel like I was being educated on something that I don't get to see every day. And it's just a celebration. Okay, next is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. We've talked about that enough. Brad Pitt may win the Oscar. We'll see. Two more. I think no one's mentioned this movie yet, so I'll mention it. Parasite.
Oh yeah, I know, it's crazy. You know, I don't know if Christian's seen it, but it's crazy we haven't.
I have seen it. Yeah,
yeah. It was close on my list. I mean, I had it at number 18, but yeah.
It wasn't on my top or my worst. Like I watched it and I'm like, okay, I mean, it was cool enough, but I was kind of indifferent. Like it was entertaining, but
If I was betting, if I had to bet my own cash, I would bet that Parasite will win Best Picture at the Oscars.
Yeah, I think it's going to be that or 1917 in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's going to be one of the two. In the way they go, they do meter voting. So some people may vote for Parasite, some people may vote for 1917, but then the second place might be something like Joker, or the third place may be something like Once Upon a Time. So it's not the winner gets the most votes. It's that, but Parasite seems to be the most critically talked about film of 2019. I've been a big fan of the director. What's his name? Boon Joon-ho
or something like that?
Yeah, ever since The Host came out. And he's made wonderful films. He's made Mother. He's made The Host. Just, like I said, they're going to be turning this movie into a six-hour miniseries on HBO.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why, but we shall see. But anyway, Parasite, if you've seen it, you understand it's a metaphor. It's a metaphor for replacement and about entitlement and about surviving. I don't want to say much more. Watch it. Read the subtitles. I think you'll get something out of it.
Yeah.
My favorite movie of 2019. Christian, you hate me for saying this.
I know. I almost hate you for saying this.
I know. My favorite movie of 2019. You like what you like, okay? It's Uncut Gems starring Adam Sandler. And,
oh my God! Sorry.
Okay, it's like finding out I have a fetish. Okay, I don't get to pick it. First of all, I think it's the best acting performance Sandler's ever given. He's given good performances before, but he's usually on autopilot laziness, where he just basically takes home movies and cuts them into movies. What's the one with all his friends? The really terrible series there's been two.
Grown Ups.
Like just go on a vacation, and just film
it. Yeah.
But no, Uncut Gems was different. Uncut Gems to me, sits in the same universe as the other the director's last film, Good Time.
Oh, Good Time, yeah.
Yeah, and it occupies that space where I feel heightened every second. Like, this is not a pleasant movie to watch, and this is where I understand where you're coming from. It's not pleasant. It's not fun. You feel uncomfortable the entire time. The soundtrack keeps you... It's like sitting on a wet seat on a long plane ride. And you're not sure if the wetness is water or urine. And because of that, you're always on edge. And I can, and this movie is very divisive, by the way. This movie is very, very divisive. And I wish it had been nominated for something so people would have talked about it critically. But I don't know if you guys follow the news, but there were some Oscar voters who actually came out and said they did not vote for Adam Sandler. They did not nominate him because they don't think he earned his reputation.
That's not what I don't think you should. You shouldn't be voting on reputation. You need to be voting on performance.
It's politics. Yeah. It's completely politics.
Yeah, that's
so
stupid.
But whether you like the movie or not, we have to admit that. I mean, I think even if you guys didn't like the movie very much, which I don't think you did, that this represents possibly a new career move for Sandler going forward. He doesn't have to be in schlock.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to be.
He's finally getting noticed. I mean, he's not just doing, you know, Paul Thomas Anderson obscurities, but he's doing, one that people are talking about. And I mean, Uncut Gems, I think it made my bottom list and it was pretty close to the bottom just because I didn't enjoy it. But I also think it was well made, though, if anything. I just didn't like it. It made me too anxious. Sitting through it, I was, you know, it felt like twice as long as it is. I was just stressed out, and I didn't want to be stressed out. I wanted
See,
to,
and then
there's nothing rewarding at the end. It's like having a horror movie, and then the final girl gets slaughtered or something. It's like, well, what did I watch that for?
I don't know. I found the ending rewarding, but that's because I hated
for a different reason.
Well, somebody said the only good guy in the movie is the enforcer. You know, is the mob guy's enforcer the one he's just trying to do his job.
Yeah,
there's this Sandler guy screwing things over. By the way, nobody—he's the only likable character. Every other character in this movie is unlikable.
Yeah, and I don't like—I can't watch movies where I don't like anybody in the movie.
No, they're all terrible. They're all terrible. They're all bad people. So they're all.
But you're right. You're actually right, though. I mean, even though I didn't enjoy it, when you watch it, you definitely go, "Yeah, this is Adam Sandler stepping up." Like you say, in a lot of other movies, he's just going through the motions, but this one, I go, "Man, he's really trying in this." And like I say, he gives a good performance. It's just the rest of it's rubbish.
Yeah.
But to be honest with you, one of my favorite Adam Sandler movies is a movie that nobody likes. Also, did you guys ever watch You Don't Mess with the Zohan?
Yes,
a long time ago.
Yeah, people hate that movie, but I like that movie because he's
silly.
Because he's just doing something different, you know.
Yeah,
he's not just being. Oh, we don't talk about Jack and Jill.
Oh yeah,
but which
that's how I felt about That's My Boy with Andy Samberg, where he plays his son. Everyone hates that movie, but that's probably my favorite Adam Sandler movie.
Don't forget, Netflix said that the number one watched movie of 2019 was the Adam Sandler movie with Jennifer Aniston, Murder Mystery. So, Sandler had a good year. Don't feel bad for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, real quick before we wrap this up. So let's just talk about some of the movies we did not like, and we don't have to go into detail like we did. But, Christian, let's start with you. Movies you really didn't like besides Uncut Gems.
Oh, all right, cool. I've got like 18 here. Do you want me to like cut this down a little bit at a time?
I'll tell you what. Say the name of the movie. Tell me what you didn't like. Quick, let's go. Rapid fire.
All right, cool. All right. Okay, I'm going to go from the top down though. I hated Us. Like I said, the first 10 minutes was great, and then it nosedives to like 1 out of 10 for me. I just hated the acting. I hated the story. I just didn't think it deserved the hype. Didn't like it. We've got Uncut Gems, which we just talked about. Yeah. Another movie I despised was Her Smell. It's this sort of like indie, like girl, about this girl rock band, and it's just this. It's just a mess. It's just imagine a wasted rock singer just ranting for the majority of the movie, and I just
wait. Two Elizabeth Moss movies in a row. You have something.
Yeah, it's true. Actually,
did you hate Mad Men? So.
No, I haven't. Sorry. I have never watched it, to be honest. But
she was okay.
Well, I just watched Get Him to the Greek again last night, and she's in that, and I love that film.
What? So, she's in Get Him to the Greek? Get Him to the Greek?
Yeah. If we talk about the same person.
I love that movie. Russell Brand?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah, So next one on my list is Terminator Dark Fate. Just a terrible, terrible, terrible reboot. Big Terminator fan. It was just, I'm not going to go down. Anyway, I hated that.
That's the movie. That's the movie that turned Arnold Schwarzenegger's Terminator into a interior decorator doing draperies, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's right. That bit's actually funny.
I was going to say that's like the best part of the movie.
Yeah, like because it was so crap up to that point that once Arnie appears, it kind of salvages a little bit. I go, cool, this is kind of funny. At this point, I've given up on this film. This is funny, but yeah. So the next one on my list is this one. I appreciate it for what it is, but I was just so bored. The Lighthouse. Like it looked great. It had a great sound. It had a great vibe, but just two sailors getting drunk for the majority of the film.
Yeah. I expected something better at the ending too. I thought it was going to be something kind of cooler, but.
Yeah, it's building up. Yeah, like it builds up and you're waiting and you're waiting and then no, nothing.
It's like what is that? Yeah.
I haven't seen the movie, but how is Pattinson though? Is he still turning He's still turning into a pretty decent actor, right?
Yeah, I like him actually. Personally, I don't know about
He is our new Batman, so we have to respect. Yeah.
He was all right. I didn't mind him. Like I'm not a fan of him, but I thought he does all right. But Willem Dafoe is outstanding in that in that film. Mm-hmm. I will give Willem Dafoe. Yeah, he's fantastic.
Yeah, he's really good.
Yeah. The next one I got here is The Fanatic, John Travolta, directed by Fred Durst.
Oh, that movie! Yeah, we talked about this off the air. I think we both agree the movie's utter garbage. But John Travolta's not bad in it.
Yeah, he's trying. I'll give him kudos for trying. It's like
I would say that movie had if Zombieland 2 had the funniest moment of the year, then this movie has the single worst scene of any movie last year. And you know the scene I'm talking about, the one in the car.
Oh, yeah.
That is did you see this movie?
I did not see it. I kind of want to just cuz I kind of like watching bad movies sometimes.
It's on Hulu, by the way.
Okay.
But no, I won't spoil it for you, but the scene in the car with the Limp Bizkit thing is just atrocious. It's exquisitely bad.
And the thing is that as we discussed, it could have been a really good moment. Mm-hmm. But they went the other way.
Yeah, they went the worst way.
Yeah. Next one I've got here is Dragged Across Concrete. I love Mel Gibson. Despite his personal life and things, like as far as filmmaking, I think he's a fantastic filmmaker. And he's been in a lot of movies I enjoy. But this movie is rubbish. It's just Dragged Across time. It's just long and slow. And
I like the movie better than you, but I'll say this though: I understand why people don't like it. But you got to admit, you haven't seen it, Ethan. No spoilers.
No, I have not seen that one.
This movie does one thing interesting, and I think you could agree with me, Ethan. Christian, sorry, you guys all look alike on Skype. But there's a scene when a secondary character who the movie follows for a long time. You know what I'm talking about, the female in the bank, and you think she's going to turn out to be this main character, and they just offer. And the way they do it, it really wakes you up. And I like the filmmaker. I don't know. Have you seen it? His name's S. Craig Zahler. He's the one who did Bone Tomahawk, and he did Cell Block 99 with Vince Vaughn. I like this guy a lot. This is not his best movie, though.
No. Bone Tomahawk's awesome, but Dragged Across Concrete is not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What else did you hate?
Next one. The Man Who Killed Hitler and the Bigfoot.
Oh, I wanted to see that one. I didn't catch that.
It's on Hulu. It's on Hulu, too. Or Netflix.
It's kind of weird. I mean, the title itself, you're not going to get a regular film. And I'm not always after a regular film, but I was watching it and they spend so much time on the Hitler bit and then the Bigfoot bit is over in 10 minutes. And I don't know. Yeah. I guess I wanted more Bigfoot and it just kind of, I don't know.
We got Sam Elliott there too. It's like they show him beating people up. I don't think so. I'm sorry. Yeah. No. Not even his mustache.
No. So, that was a big disappointment. I thought it would be kind of cool and quirky. I don't know. It was rubbish. And the next one, I went to the premiere for this Crossbreed. This terrible sci-fi with one of the Baldwins. Oh my God, which one is it?
Was
it Billy Baldwin?
The least famous one.
That's not saying a lot.
I know. But save your money. Don't watch that one. Next one on my list is, it's funny, this film actually has a fantastic performance, which I'm surprised didn't get an Oscar nomination, and it's Glass.
Okay. Because
James McAvoy is brilliant. like, despite the fact that the rest of the film is terrible, James McAvoy, I don't understand why he hasn't been nominated for something for his performance in this, because he's fantastic. Like, the greatest acting chops I've seen in such a long time. Have you guys seen it?
Mm-mm, I haven't seen it.
No, I haven't seen it yet, but was he as good? How was his performance compared to Split? Because he was pretty good in that.
It's better than Split, because, like, they just push the envelope a little bit more. You watch him switch between multiple personalities in the same take flawlessly. It's just it's brilliant, guys. You got to watch it just for his performance. The rest of it's crap, but no, he's fantastic. But it still made my worst movies, just because I had a lot of hopes for it. You know, I enjoyed oh my god, what's the first one called?
Unbreakable.
Yeah, yeah, I enjoyed Unbreakable, and I enjoyed Split. But Glass is just...
You gotta admit, though, Bruce Willis in a movie is kind of a warning sign now.
Yeah.
It's weird, right?
Yeah, it's like, he's trying to do what Nicolas Cage does, but Nicolas Cage at least signals there's gonna be some crazy there.
Yeah, yeah, he has, like, a thing, right?
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage does,
and
yeah.
Bruce Willis is like, I need a paycheck.
He's, like, boring Bruce Willis.
Yeah, like,
I mean, he's, like, boring Nicolas Cage.
It's sad. It's sad.
Yeah. So, so James McAvoy is brilliant, but the rest of the movie is awful. There's another one I got here. Midway. Oh, God, that's garbage. It's done. I'm pretty sure it's done by the guys that did Independence Day, so I was kind of hoping, because I enjoyed Independence Day for what it was. But it's just terrible blue screens, terrible acting. It's just, don't waste your time on it.
But it's got the Jonas brother in it.
And then, you know what? And I love military. I love war movies. I love movies, even the ones that aren't that great. I enjoy anything military related, but not this one. No, Midway is like one of the worst military movies I've seen in a long time. What else did I dislike? Men in Black International. God, that was rubbish.
Oh, I didn't even see that one.
No one did.
No. Yeah. Okay. And this one is probably going to surprise you guys. And Midsommar. I don't get the hype.
I didn't see that one either, actually.
I saw it. Not up to its potential. I'm glad it wasn't Cannibals, though.
Yeah.
I'm glad it wasn't Cannibals. By the way, I do think, though, it didn't make my favorite or worst, but I do think it was beautiful. I thought it was very pretty to look at. Possibly the second prettiest movie after Last Black Man in San Francisco, in my opinion. But mostly visuals. Wow. Mostly visuals.
Yeah, but nothing happened, really. Like, if you... Nothing happens. It builds up to, I don't know. I was just bored.
No. I didn't get it. If you have friends who say, "Hey, let's go see some religious cult in Sweden," you say no.
Yeah.
You say no.
And it's one of those things where, you know, like, you're watching it and you're going, "Come on, man! The alarm bell. You should be running now."
They never get, the audience gets it, but the characters don't get it.
I
will give the movie credit for one thing, though. It did everything in broad daylight for the most part, and that's different, and that was spooky.
That's cool.
Like, it was legitimately spooky on that. So,
yeah. What else we got here? Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but we already talked about that. What else did I not like? Bombshell. I didn't like Bombshell. Do I go down this path?
Two of the actresses were nominated for Best Something or Other. That's what's called the political gimme. You see this every year in the Oscars, where they over-nominate a movie for some reason because they want to get this movie attention for the cause. Nobody saw Bombshell. It is a terrible film, by the way. I think Adam McKay make it? It is garbage.
I'm having a hard time. I have the screener for it, but I'm having the hardest time bringing myself to watching it. Not appealing.
You've seen this movie before. This is the kind of movie that HBO churns out. They churned out like four of them this year, even with Dick Cheney. Not Dick Cheney, with Russell Crowe. And it's not even about being politics. It's about not even about the hypocrisy of Hollywood, that you have every other studio firing people in the shadow of Me Too to have the audacity to misdirect and put their finger on this one little news station when they themselves have been like the epicenter of this crisis.
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird, right?
Go figure. Yeah.
The thing is, I mean, you understand the message that they want to tell, and I agree with you know the message, but the way that the story that they tell, it doesn't do justice to what they're trying to do. You know, I watched this, and at the end of it, even my wife, we're just like going, I know I'm supposed to feel sorry for these women, but the way that it's been done, I didn't like it. Yeah.
Although, I got to tell you, though, good performances.
Oh yes, absolutely. This fantastic performances.
And Charlize Theron doesn't age. She's ageless. That's
crazy.
Yeah, it's go figure.
No.
Skip it.
Yeah, cool. And that's pretty much it. Like I got Isn't It Romantic and another movie called Anna, Black and Blue. There's a few other in there that just, what am I watching? But
don't deserve your oxygen, Christian.
No, that's right.
So speaking of oxygen, Ethan, let's go. How many movies did you despise?
I'm just going to really touch upon five because the ones after that are just, I didn't hate, I just were like indifferent more. But I'm going to do the five. I'll start with my worst, like Christian did, I think. I think the worst movie of the year was Captive State. Going into it, it looked like it was going to be a really cool alien invasion movie, kind of like District 9, like an indie alien movie, but then ended up being super confusing. It loses track of its cast even at times. Like, you go a half hour without seeing the main character at one point. Mm-hmm. And I was excited before it because it was the only follow-up by the writer of one of my favorite movies of all time, another Shia LaBeouf movie called The Battle of Shaker Heights from back in 2003. So, I mean, 16 years later, she's writing her second movie. And it was this, and I was so disappointed. I mean, I guess you can lose your writing chops in 16 years if you don't do it. But I was not a fan of that one. Not a lot of people saw it either, I don't think. So.
No, I forgot it was out.
Yeah. And then another one I hated was Hustlers. It was just manipulative. Yes. Like same type of thing. Like you don't even like the characters really. They kind of are doing these terrible things and you're made to kind of praise them, though. Like, they want you to love these characters, but they're doing terrible things and trying to justify them. But it's, like, still the whole, like, eye for an eye thing. It's like, well, you're just making it worse, but we're supposed to celebrate you.
I had a talk about a friend who saw that movie, and he didn't like it either. And he's a big Jennifer Lopez fan. Mm. And he says, basically, this is the Mary Sue of Martin Scorsese films. Where you have these terrible characters, these terrible female characters who learn nothing, who suffer no consequences, who do all this heinous, horrible things. And unlike a Martin Scorsese movie where they, you know, ultimately usually meet bad ends, nothing happens.
No.
And it's not a satisfying movie. I thought it was terrible.
It's not satisfying. I mean, it's all about, you know, but they're trying to get back at these, you know, materialistic, Wall Street guys. But then they're arguably even more materialistic than the people. It's just like it's anti-money, but then it's like, oh yeah, but we celebrate, you know, we're cool because we're rich now. It's like, okay.
I think the message is the exact opposite of Bombshell, is that you have these women that are trading sex for power and they're flaunting it, and it's like, this is a very, and they, this movie was touted as a feminist movie. Like, no, this movie's total patriarchy. Like, you're gonna make a lot of money if you shake your ass and dance on tables and swindle.
Yeah, look, if it was the other, if the roles were reversed, what would it be? You know, it wouldn't even get made.
Would be Magic Mike. It'd be a better movie. So,
sorry, that was a good movie. I like Magic Mike. Yeah.
The first one, anyway.
Yeah, I like the first one. Yeah.
Okay. So
I mentioned Uncut Gems already. Mm. And then I got Frozen 2. Just hindered too much on this by the success of the original. I thought that, you know, they took the fan favorite characters and used them, included them unnecessarily. The music tries to match up, but it's not good. The music was what I was excited about. I was like, because even if the movie sucks, at least you can have cool songs. But I hated the music, possibly more than I hated the movie. The concept is kind of cool, but then it gets caught up too much in trying to actually be a sequel and please fans, and they just kind of forget about how cool the concept is and just poorly executed.
The highest grossing animated movie of all time, by the way.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's make no mistake though, these movies are babysitters. That's all they are. They're not movies in the way we think.
And it was very apparent. Yeah, it's apparent with this one. I think they didn't care.
Yeah, there was no songs. No songs were breakout hits. In fact, they were quite bad.
No. Yeah, they were pretty bad. And then the last one I want to talk about is we've talked about it ad nauseum. It's The Rise of Skywalker. Ooh. I don't know if I'd rather watch Attack of the Clones before I watch this movie. I almost hated it. The only reason I didn't completely hate it is because it's still Star Wars and I still like the universe and it still has, you know, Carrie Fisher and Chewbacca and even Lando. I really didn't like this movie.
I think you're the first one to put on any list. So yeah. for anything. So
did you, how do you feel about it, Christian? I don't know if you
I enjoyed it. I didn't hate it, but I didn't think it was like a standout movie. Like, I watched it because it was Star Wars, and I walked out like, I was entertained. It had all the stuff in there, but it wasn't brilliant, but it wasn't crap either. It was, it was there.
Yeah, I think I did myself a disservice by binging the original trilogy the night before. And then just juxtaposed to that, I'm like, I forgot how good the original
don't
was.
Don't eat steak before you have a hamburger.
Exactly, so, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not on one of my top favorites, and it's not one of my top least, but I we've talked about this, Ethan. I came out of it moderately not hating it, but I felt nonplussed about it. I felt, okay, this is the damage that Disney has done to this brand, especially with the last film, which, by the way, can we just all say now, hampered the franchise. The Last Jedi was divisive to the point where I think it broke it. And and this movie was Disney's, and in some ways I almost wish they had followed through, because they cowardly tried to retcon things that happened in Last Jedi.
Yeah, that's, I didn't like that either.
You know, and I'll say this about, I liked the Rise of Skywalker better, but I didn't like it as a movie better. I liked it as a collection of best ofs. As a movie, it's a mess. It's a total mess.
Yeah,
it's a complete mess.
It's not a movie. It's a bunch of scenes stitched together to make me feel happy.
Yeah.
It's like a string of dopamine hits.
It's like it's a 2.5 hour trailer, basically.
Yeah, it's like, we're so sorry we did this. Here's your mask back. Here's Chewbacca. Oh, he's not dead. He's still alive. Here you go, Chewbacca.
That could have been the best moment.
Yeah, but the movie had no. And what's really sad is that you have, this is supposed to be the last Star Wars movie in the sequel, and it just met with indifference. I mean, the movie made $1 billion, right? But a lot of films on the top 10 made $1 billion. It's not that hard to do anymore. This movie should have made $4 billion. This should have been, just think of the excitement people had for the last, The Force Awakens, which, by the way, you know, which is, like I was telling you before, it still holds a lot of records. And then it just, you just see the energy drop.
Yeah.
It's just, it's textbook case, when you, especially when you juxtapose it next to the Avengers movies, of how you keep the enthusiasm for something up. And it just didn't work.
Yeah, no, totally. And I think part of the problem, I think, personally, was that the critics, the initial, like, the reviews were pretty mixed to low. And so I think when people came out and actually saw it, like, you know, the fans saw it, I think they were expecting it to be bad. And so it was a little bit better than that. So then the audience score is pretty high on Rotten Tomatoes, higher than the critic score, at least. So I think that's one of the reason, too.
I think Rian Johnson is a very good filmmaker on his own stuff. I think neither of you guys mentioned Knives Out, but that movie was very successful and people seem to like it. He just doesn't seem to play well with other people's properties, and that's a problem. Yeah. So, okay, is that your list for top worst or least top?
Yep. Those are just the ones I wanted to mention.
Okay, I have a couple too, but I really don't want to talk about these stinkers too much. But I'll say this, in no particular order, the bottom, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay, you've seen a couple of these. One of the worst movies of the year, no particular order, The Lion King remake.
I didn't see that one, actually.
Yeah.
This movie takes all the joy and the creativity and the fun of the 1994 original and sucks it out and replaces it with this soulless automaton that has no life, no value. Again, this movie made $1 billion, $1.5 billion, but not because people liked it, because people brought their kids and babies at them. So don't be fooled. This is Jon Favreau's worst movie, and frankly, one of the most insipid things I've ever seen. I don't hate this movie. I have sheer indifference to it. Because it steals from the original. It steals from what the original movie did. It doesn't even try to put a spin on it. The best scene in this movie is with a friggin' dung beetle rolling a pile of shit across the board. That's the most original thing in this movie. You remember that scene? You've seen the movie, right, guys? With a dung beetle.
I have not seen it.
Like, that's literally what this movie adds is a dung beetle. And that's the best part. But no, the movie is soulless. It is soulless.
Yeah, it's definitely soulless.
It's soulless. It has no joy to it.
And that's almost worse than something being poorly executed.
Exactly. Like that, I now have some respect for The Last Jedi for at least trying something.
Yeah.
But The Lion King is the end of everything. It is the end of
creativity.
No, I mean it's just terrible. So they're going to remake Bambi. So get ready for more soulless Bambi.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Okay. Next on the list, The Dead Don't Die. Very disappointed. Yeah. Very disappointed.
That was the next one on my list, actually, my number six.
How the hell do we get two zombie movies with Bill Murray in 1 year? This movie is also soulless. This is Jim Jarmusch, who a filmmaker I respect quite a bit, not trying.
Yeah, and the cast boring.
The cast is not exciting, and the cast is fantastic. It's just they're all terrible. Everybody's terrible in this movie. This movie is garbage. Yeah. It's not a satire. It's not meta. It doesn't know what it is, and it looks awful. It looks terrible. So, okay, next on my list, and I'm sorry, Christian, I hate to blow your bubble.
Oh no.
Brightburn.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's, I like the idea. I like some of the gore. I just thought the execution was very poor. They didn't convince me. Is this guy evil or is he being activated by the alien ship? He just went from good kid to bad kid overall. I would have rather it had been like The Omen, and he's just a badass in the very beginning instead of this flick being switched. I don't know. I think this movie is like Uncut Gems. I think it's divisive. I think the people who love it, love it. I think people like me who hate it, hate it. I'm right and you're wrong, but we're all entitled to our opinion. But I know a lot of people like this movie. Okay, next on my list was going to be the worst movie I've seen, but I've decided not to call it a movie. So this one gets an asterisk. It's called Just Mercy with Michael P. Jordan. This is one of the worst experiences I've ever had watching a film because it's not really a movie. It's an agenda-driven agitprop that at the end of the movie stops trying and just shows video of people walking out of prison. The performances are terrible. The writing is awful. The music is horrendous. The story is beyond predictable. The acting is so bad. It is so horrendous. I'm sorry. I like Michael B. Jordan. He cannot give a dramatic performance of this caliber yet. He's too young. It's like watching Leonardo DiCaprio when he was doing The Aviator, when he's trying to play like a 50-year-old guy. He can't do it.
Yeah.
He has no perspective for the role.
Exactly. It's not there. And again, it's in a year filled with these politically charged, I'll just call them justice movies, because I think we talked about this, police violence, wrongful incrimination. You can't just show the story. You can't just show this. It's manipulative garbage, and it's an embarrassment. And we get like three of these movies a year. This is the worst one that I've seen in a long time. It's really bad. It's like a John Grisham movie, but worse. There you go. Okay.
Wow.
These next two movies I'm going to group together because they're both shit. Late Night and Long Shot.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. You've talked about these.
Late Night and Long Shot are both movies that attempt to do the same thing, that attempt to be political satire or late night satire. They're both executed so poorly and written so badly that I believe Late Night was on Amazon, but Long Shot actually went into theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Seth Rogen. I told you, we like Charlize Theron. Miscast, unimaginative, uninspired, people who don't understand comedy trying to do comedy. And don't put CG jokes in your political comedy. We don't need a CG Seth Rogen falling out of a window. Late Night was the worst movie because Late Night had Emma Thompson. And you should never pair Emma Thompson with, what's her name? Who's in the movie?
Mindy Kaling.
Mindy Kaling. Just the worst. She's terrible. She's everything she touches. You can trace The Office for when it went downhill when she became a head writer. She's terrible. Speaking of bad movies, okay, I got three more and then we're done. The worst documentary I've seen in a long time. Framing John DeLorean.
I wanted to see that one. No, I wanted to see it. Wasn't good?
It's on my worst list.
I didn't know it was going to be – I didn't know you didn't like it. I heard decent things about it.
I despise this thing. It's a movie about – now, I was in Vegas a couple weeks ago for a show, and we parked in front of the store – you've heard of the store Fry's. And sitting outside in the store Fry's was this old dilapidated DeLorean car. And I swear to God, I have pictures if you want to see it. The license plate said Time Machine. And in real life, they look horrible. But on video, they look great. And John DeLorean's story is awesome. If you've ever seen his story, this guy is fascinating. And what they did is it's half documentary, half recreation with Alec Baldwin. And sometimes they just stop telling the story and just interview Alec Baldwin dressed as John DeLorean. They even admit they're not interested in John DeLorean. This movie is confusing, muddle trash. It is just – you sit down, you want to see this cool story, and instead you get this confused narrative that doesn't know where it wants to be. So, okay, I got two more. Speaking of Hustlers being a terrible movie, which it was, a worse movie was The Kitchen, which tried to do the same thing. Did anybody see The Kitchen? Anybody?
No.
No.
I didn't see that one.
No, you didn't miss anything. Had Melissa McCartney, had, I think, Tiffany Haddish, and your favorite actress, Kate Moss. Christian. This movie wants to be a Scorsese movie so badly, but the acting is, except for Melissa McCartney, the acting is atrocious. Tiffany Haddish cannot act. She is not a good actress. She's a funny comedian, not a good actress. And Kate Moss is terrible. I don't know what else to say. The source material was a graphic novel. Go read that instead. This is mismatched trash.
Mm.
Okay, and the worst movie of the year is the worst movie I've seen in a long time. It's one of the worst movies I've seen of the decade. It is a movie called Jexy.
Oh, yeah, you're telling me about that one.
Has anybody seen Jexy? Has anybody seen, subjected themselves to Jexy? Okay, Jexy is what happens when retards try to remake the movie Her. It's about a guy who has a relationship with his OS, but the OS is a stalker, so it's basically Fatal Attraction. Stars Adam Devine, who is the least funny person I've ever seen in my life. He makes Pauly Shore look like Orson Welles.
Pauly Shore is funny.
Pauly Shore has the potential. Adam Devine is not funny. He is just not funny. He's not funny. And they keep putting him in movies. They put him in your favorite movie, Christian. What was the movie with Rebel Wilson? Who is also not funny?
Yeah.
Who's also not funny?
Yeah.
Oh, I love Rebel Wilson.
Really?
Yeah, I do, actually.
In what?
Like everything she's in.
Really?
I don't know. She just makes me laugh so hard every time. Like, I'll hate a movie, but if she's in it, I'll laugh because she's in it. Like Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah, she was in that, but she's the worst thing. But anyway, this movie is terrible. Everybody is terrible. Adam Devine is terrible. Michael Pena is terrible. Everybody in this movie is embarrassed to be in this movie. I bet they thought it would never come out, and it did. And so there you go. Be careful. It's like writing offensive racist tweets. Don't do it. It will come back. So, all right. Before we clip this up, last minute, we'll just go down a quick list real quick. We'll make this quick, guys. Starting with you, Christian. Some movies you missed you wish you had seen.
Movies that I missed. Oh, okay. I really wanted to – I haven't missed it. I just haven't got around to watching it. Do you want to see The Irishman?
Mm-hmm.
What else came out? I think actually, there's not too many that are still out that I've missed. I saw most. There's a lot of stuff that I think are streaming. I want to see that Marriage Story one. My wife said it's really good. I do want to see the Two Popes, but I just haven't gotten around to it. And that Antonio Banderas one, is it Pain and Glory?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, yeah. There's a few on there that I haven't gotten around to. But yeah.
Well, 2020 is just getting started, so what better time to catch up on 2019?
Yeah.
So, okay, Ethan, same question to you. Movies you wish you had seen.
Oh, man, there's a ton. I mean, I definitely wanted to see the movie Good Boys. That was one I thought was going to be pretty funny. That's great. on Christian's list, actually. I hadn't seen maybe like half of your top 10 list. Mm. Alita, that'd be cool to see. Let's see. I really wanted to see Long Shot, actually, because I like Seth Rogen and Charlize Theron, but after your recommendation, maybe not.
You may. I mean, like I said, you may like it, you may not. To me, it's a waste of talent.
Yeah,
I didn't find that one. It was all right, but it wasn't great.
A big one I missed was Shazam. I want to see that one. Ford vs. Ferrari. Want to see that. The Report with Adam Driver. Heard good things about that one. And probably Yesterday would be like another one that. I know I've heard mixed things about that one, but I just think it's a cool premise. So,
I liked it. It was good.
His movies always get mixed. We're talking about Danny Boyle.
Danny Boyle, yeah.
Yeah, his movies. I'll tell you, his movies have a certain feel, don't they? When they're written by what's his name? Richard. Is it Richard Curtis who writes his movies a lot?
Mm. Maybe
he writes a lot of schmaltz. But if you like your schmaltz, it's good schmaltz.
I mean, I've liked pretty much everything. I like Slumdog. I like 127 Hours. Millions is the one that people don't really talk about, but yeah.
He was supposed to do James Bond, but that didn't happen.
Yeah.
So, okay, anything else that stood out that you want to see?
No, I mean, just too much stuff to name, but those are the ones that I think on my list.
I'm gonna cheat a little bit because I'm just gonna go through a quick list of movies I did see that didn't fit on my top list or anything, because I'm gonna end up seeing everything at some point, because I'll be a little old man and they'll wheel me in a home and they'll just stick me in front of a TV and things will be playing and I can't get out. I'll be trapped. So let's see here. Okay, here's my list. And Dolomite Is My Name. Like Christian said, I actually liked it. Here's a movie that no one saw: The Kid Who Would Be King.
Oh yeah, I wanted to see that one.
No, did anybody see this?
That's with Andy Serkis's son, was it?
Yeah, it's Joe Cornish, the guy who did Attack the Block. It's his follow up.
Yeah,
it's fun. Wow. It's different. It feels different. It's not great, but it's different. Another movie I liked. I'm sorry, Christian. I kind of like Dragged Across Concrete. I didn't love it, but I like movies that are obsessively violent for no reason. And this guy had a vivisecting a criminal who swallowed a key. It was really gross.
Yeah, but there was like two scenes. Anyway, keep going.
Yeah. But anyway, the best documentary I've seen in a long time was a movie about China called One Child Nation. It was about the preposterous stupidity of socialism and communism and how it tries to direct human reproduction. And if you see one documentary about China this year, do not see the one on Netflix. See One Child Nation. It's a better movie. Speaking of Netflix, the Steven Soderbergh movie that no one saw called High Flying Bird is entertaining. The best monster movie of the year was not Godzilla, although I did like Godzilla, but it was called Crawl, about the alligators in the house.
Yeah, that's a cool movie. That I enjoyed that.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I love the director. And this is going to surprise you. This is not a good movie. This is not a good movie. Don't blame me if you hate it. But the new Shaft made me laugh.
Really?
Yeah, because Samuel Jackson is actually trying to have a good time. The movie is preposterously stupid, and the concept is bad. It's badly directed. But for some reason, I laughed, and I don't know why. I don't know why. So. Okay, next, Midsommar. We talked about that already. Very beautiful, very pretty, very, very long and stretches of dullness. I'll put it on my list because no one else did. The Irishman. I think this is – a lot of people think this is a front runner for Best Oscar. It's too long.
It's crazy.
It's too long.
Too long.
And the de-aging doesn't always work because you can de-age an 80-year-old man to look 50, but the body's still moving like an 80-year-old man, and that's a problem. And I'll just say, because no one else mentioned on the list, Toy Story 4, it was okay. It was not great. Mm-hmm. It was not bad. Yeah. It existed, and it didn't make me hate the franchise.
Yeah, that was a big disappointment for me, too. I love Toy Story. Toy Story 3 is one of my favorite movies of all time, and we had high hopes, but yeah, let me down.
I liked it. I enjoyed it, but I hope it's the last one. No more false endings. Just end it. I'm done crying. I can't cry anymore. I cry at every one of these things. I didn't cry at this one, but I did get misty-eyed at the end. But that's it. And I think that's it. I think that's 2019 in a nutshell. What do you think, guys?
Yeah.
Okay, before my voice gives out even further.
Good year.
Yeah, pretty good year. No real big standout one way or the other. A lot of good variety. A lot of good indie. A lot of good streaming. A lot of good movies from Asia, by the way. We didn't really talk about that, but that's subject for another time. The Oscars are going to take place on February 9th. We'll see how it goes. But until then, you've been listening to the Pop Zara podcast. This has been your host, Nathan Evans, talking about the best, the worst, and everything else of 2019, the movies that we loved and hated, with our special guests, editors at large, Ethan Brem and Christian Sterling. Gentlemen, thank you for your opinions, even the wrong ones. Everything's welcome. PopZara.com. You can like us, love us, share us, anything else. Guys, thank you very much. We will watch the Oscars. We'll see how right and wrong we were. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Pop Zara podcast. For more quality original content, check out PopZara.com for the latest reviews and previews in gaming, movies, tech, and more.